Chapter 12. An Old Pipe. A gust of wind, swirling dust down the Lugard Street, caught Gareth Bryn's velvet hat, sweeping it from his head directly under one of the lumbering wagons. An iron-rimmed wheel ground the hat into the hard clay of the street, leaving a flattened ruin behind. For a moment he stared at it, then walked on. It was showing travel stains anyway, he told himself. His silk coat had been dusty before reaching Murundi, too. Brushing no longer did much good, when he even took the trouble. It looked more brown than gray now. He should find something plainer. He was not on his way to a ball. Dodging between wagons rumbling down the rutted street, he ignored the driver's curses that followed him. Any decent squadman could give better in his sleep, and ducked into a red-roofed inn called the Wagon Seat. The painting on the sign gave the name an explicit interpretation. The common room was like every common room he had seen in Lugard. Wagon drivers and merchants' guards packed in with stablemen, farriers, laborers, every sort of man, all talking or laughing as loud as they could, while drinking as much as they could, one hand for the cup and one to fondle the serving girls. For that matter, it was not all that much different from common rooms and taverns in many other towns, though most were considerably milder. A buxom young woman, in a blouse that seemed about to fall off, capered and sang atop a table at one side of the room, to the supposed music of two flutes and a 12-string bittern. He had little ear for music, but he paused a moment to appreciate her song. She would have gone over well in any soldier's camp he had ever seen. But then, she would have been as popular if she could not sing a note. Wearing that blouse, she would have found a husband in short order. Johnny and Barham were already there, Johnny's size enough to grant them a table by themselves despite his thin hair and the bandage he still wore around his temples. They were listening to the girl sing, or at least staring at her. He touched each man on the shoulder and nodded toward the side door that led to the stable yard, where a sullen groom with a squint delivered their horses for 3 silver pennies. A year or so earlier, Bryn could have bought a fair horse for no more. The troubles to the west and in Carrion were playing havoc with trade and prices. No one spoke until they passed the city gates and were on a seldom-traveled road, winding north toward the River Storn, little more than a wide dirt track. Then Barim said, "They were here yesterday, my lord." Bryn had learned that much himself. 3 pretty young women together, obvious outlanders, could not pass through a city like Lugard without being remarked. By men, anyway.
"Them and a fellow with shoulders," Barim went on. "Sounds maybe like that Dallin was with them when they burned down Nem's barn. Anyway, whoever he is, they was at the 9-horse hitch for a bit, but all they did was drink some and leave. That Domani girl the lads was telling me about, she nearly kicked up a fuss flashing her smile and swaying about, but then she calmed everything down again the same way. Burn me, but I'd like to meet me a Domani woman."
"Did you hear which way they went, Barim?" Bryn asked patiently. He had not been able to learn that.
No, my lord. But I heard there's been plenty of white cloaks passing through, all heading west. You think maybe old Pedrin Niles planning something? Maybe in Altara?"
"That's not our business anymore, Barim." Bryn knew his patience sounded a little frayed this time, but Barim was an old enough campaigner to stick to the matter at hand.
"I know where they went, my lord," Johnny said. "West, on the Johanna Road. And pushing hard by what I heard."
He sounded troubled.
"My lord, I found 2 merchants' guards, lads who used to be in the guards, and had a drink with them. Happens they were in a stew called the Good Night's Ride when that girl Mara came in and asked for a job singing. She didn't get it. Didn't want to show her legs the way the singers in most of these places do, as who can blame her? And she left. From what Barham told me, it was right after that they all set off west. I don't like it, my lord. She isn't the kind of girl to want a job in a place like that. I think she's trying to get away from that Dalin fellow.
Strangely, despite the lump on his head, Johnny had no animosity toward the three young women. It was his opinion, often expressed since leaving the manor, that the girls were in some sort of predicament and needed to be rescued. Bryn suspected that if he did catch up to the young women and take them back to his estate, Johnny would be after him to turn them over to Johnny's daughters to mother. Barham had no such feelings.
Gil-Dan, he scowled. Or maybe Altara, or Amadicia. We'll kiss the dark one getting them back. Hardly seems worth the annoyance for a barn and some cows.
Bryn said nothing. They had followed the girl this far, and Murundi was a bad place for Andermen. Too many border troubles over too many years. Only a fool would chase into Murundi after an Oathbreaker's eyes. How much bigger a fool to follow halfway across the world?
Those lads I talked to, Johnny said diffidently. My lord, it seems a lot of the old lads who served under you are being sent off.
Emboldened by Bryn's silence, he went on.
Lots of new fellows in. Lots. Those lads said at least 4 or 5 for everyone told he wasn't wanted anymore. The sort that like to cause trouble more than to stop it. There's some calling themselves the White Lions, who only answer to this Gabriel.
He spat to show what he thought of that.
And a bunch more, not part of the guards at all. Not house levies. Near as they could say, Gabriel's got 10 times as many men under arms as there are guards. And they've all sworn to the throne of Andor, but not to the Queen. That's no longer our business either, Bryn said curtly.
Barham had his tongue stuffed into his cheek, the way he always did when he knew something he either did not want to tell or was not sure was important enough.
What is it, Barham? Out with it, man.
The leather-faced fellow stared at him in amazement. Barham had never figured out how Bryn knew he was holding back.
Well, my lord, some of the folks I talked to said some of those white cloaks yesterday was asking questions. About a girl... Sounds like that Mara. Wanted to know who she was, where she went, like that. I heard they get real interested when they learned she was gone. If they're after her, she could be hanged before we ever find her. If they have to go to the trouble of chasing her down, they might not ask too many questions about whether she's really a dark friend, or whatever it is they're after her for.
Bryn frowned. White cloaks? What would the Children of the Light want with Mara? He would never believe she was a dark friend. But then he had seen a baby-faced young fellow hanged in Camelon, a dark friend who had been teaching children in the streets about the glories of the Dark One. The Great Lord of the Dark, he had called him. The lad had killed 9 of them in 3 years, as near as could be discovered, when they looked like turning him in.
No. That girl is no dark friend, and I'll stake my life on it.
White cloaks were suspicious of everyone, and if they took it into their heads that she had fled Lugard to avoid them... He booted Traveler to a canter. The big-nosed bag gelding was not flashy, but he had endurance and courage. The other two caught up soon enough, and they kept their mouths shut, seeing the mood he was in. 2 miles or so from Lugard, he turned off into a thicket of oak and leatherleaf. The rest of his men had made a temporary camp here, in a clear space under thick, spreading oak limbs. Several small, smokeless fires were burning. They would take any opportunity to brew up some tea. Some were dozing. Sleep was another thing an old soldier never missed a chance to snatch. Those awake kicked the rest out of their naps, and they all looked up at him. For a moment, he sat his saddle, studying them. Gray hair and bald heads and age-creased faces. Still hard and fit, but even so. He had been a fool to risk bringing them into Murundi just because he had to know why a woman had broken an oath. And maybe with white cloaks after them. No telling how far or how long from home before it was done. If he turned back now... They would have gone more than a month before they saw Khor Springs again. If he went on, there was no guarantee the chase would stop short of the Arath Ocean. He should be taking these men and himself home. He should. He had no call to ask them to try snatching those girls out of White Cloak hands. He could leave Mara to White Cloak justice.
"We will be heading west," he announced. And immediately there was a scramble of dousing fires with the tea and fastening pots to saddles. "We will have to press hard. I mean to catch them in Altara if I can. But if not, there's no telling where they'll lead us. You could see Jahanna or Amador or Ebu Dar before we're done."
He affected a laugh.
"You'll find out how tough you are if we reach Ebu Dar. They've taverns there where the barmaids skin Ilianas for dinner and spit White Cloaks for sport."
They laughed harder than the jest was worth.
"We won't worry with you along, my lord," Thad cackled, stuffing his tin cup into his saddlebags.
His face was wrinkled like crumpled leather.
"Why, I hear you had a run-in with the Amarlin herself once, and—"
Jar Sylvan kicked him on the ankle, and he rounded on the younger man, gray-haired but still younger, with a clenched fist.
"Why'd you do that, Sylvan? You want a broke head, you just—" "What?"
The meaningful glares Sylvan and some of the others were giving him finally sank in.
Oh, yes.
He buried himself in checking the girth straps on his saddle, but no one was laughing anymore. Bryn forced his face to relax from stoniness. It was time he put the past in the past. Just because a woman whose bed he had shared, and more, he had thought, just because that woman looked at him as though she had never known him, was no reason to stop speaking her name. Just because she had exiled him from Camelin on pain of death, for giving her the advice he had sworn to give. If she came a cropper with this Lord Gabriel, who had suddenly appeared in Camelin, it was no longer any concern of his. She had told him, in a voice as flat and cold as smooth ice, that his name would never be spoken in the palace again, that only his long service kept her from sending him to the headsman for treason. Treason. He needed to keep spirits up, especially if this turned into a long chase. Hooking a knee around the high cantle of his saddle, he took out his pipe and pouch and filled his pipe with tabak. The bowl was carved with a wild bull collared with the rose crown of Andor. For 1,000 years, that had been the sign of the House of Bryn. Strength and courage in the service of the Queen. He needed a new pipe. This one was old.
"I didn't come out of that as well as you might have heard."
He leaned down from one of the men to hand him a twig still glowing from one of the spent fires, then straightened to puff his pipe alight.
"It was some 3 years ago. The Amarlin was making a progression. Carrion, Tyr, Ilion, and finishing up in Camelin before returning to Tar Valon. At that time, we were having problems with Mirandian borderlords, as usual."
Laughter rippled. They had all served on the Mirandian border at one time or another.
"I had sent some of the guards down to set the Mirandians straight on who owned the sheep and cattle on our side of the border. I never expected the Amarlin to take an interest."
He certainly had their attention. Preparations to leave were still going on, but more slowly.
"Swan Sanche and Elida closeted themselves with Morghese."
There, he had said her name again, and it did not even smart.
"And when they came out, Morghese was half Thunderhead, with lightning shooting out of her eyes, and half 10-year-old who'd been hauled up by her mother for stealing honey cakes. She's a tough woman, but caught between Elida and the Amarlin seat."
He shook his head, and they chuckled. Aes Sedai attentions were one thing none of them envied lords and rulers.
"She ordered me to remove all troops from the border with Murundi immediately. I asked her to discuss it with me in private, and Swan Sanche jumped all over me. In front of half the court, she chewed me up one side and down the other like a raw recruit. Said if I couldn't do as I was told, she'd use me for fish bait."
He had had to beg her pardon before it was done, in front of everyone, for trying to do as he had been sworn to do. But there was no need to do that. Even at the end, he had not been sure that she would not make Morghese behead him, or have it done herself.
"Must have meant to catch yourself a mighty big fish,"
someone laughed, and others joined in.
"The upshot was," Bryn went on, "my hide got singed and the guards were ordered back from the border. So if you're looking to me to protect you in Abu Dhar, just remember it's my opinion those barmaids would hang the Amelin out to dry along with the rest of us."
They roared with mirth.
"Did you ever find out what it was about, my lord?"
Johnny wanted to know. Bryn shook his head.
"Aes Sedai business of some sort, I expect. They don't tell the likes of you and me what they are up to."
That earned a few chuckles as well. They mounted up with an alacrity that belied their ages. "Some of them are no older than me," he thought wryly. Too old to go chasing after a pretty pair of eyes young enough to be his daughters, if not his granddaughters. "I only want to know why she broke oath," he told himself firmly. "Only that." Raising his hand, he signaled forward, and they headed west, leaving a trail of dust. It would take hard riding to catch up, but he meant to. In Abu Dhar, or the Pit of Doom, he would find them.